Hello, listeners, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Wednesday, August 10th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Taking a look at today's weather forecast, plan on another nice August afternoon, though temperatures will be a bit warmer compared to yesterday. Afternoon highs will generally be in the mid-80s in many areas, and with a bit of August humidity. It may seem close to 90 by late afternoon. Tomorrow and Friday, a cold front sneaks in from the Great Lakes and will stall across eastern Iowa. A chance of showers exists tomorrow. However, most, if not all, of this activity looks to miss Dyersville to the south and west, leaving the weather conditions just fine by game time. A similar setup exists for a few light showers on Friday, with the same front hung up in the area. This weekend, the front pushes north as a warm front, allowing for a few more storms on Saturday. The stories on the front page of the Courier today include Waterloo uniforms debate reopened, move to the music, and let's begin reading the top story on the page, Republicans defend Trump, FBI search denounced by Iowa GOP leaders. Tom Barton of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau wrote this story, Dateline Des Moines. Iowa Republicans jumped to former President Donald Trump's defense after the FBI search for documents as part of an investigation into whether he took classified records from the White House to his Florida estate. Some quickly denounced the Monday search by the FBI of Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida, where agents executed a search warrant for classified documents, the Associated Press reported. Quote, the Department of Justice must immediately explain their justification for this unprecedented raid, Marion Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson tweeted on Tuesday. Quote, a Republican majority will provide rigorous oversight of the Biden administration and ensure they are serving the American people, not targeting them, Hinson tweeted. The Miami Herald reported agents obtained a search warrant from a federal magistrate judge in West Palm Beach to get dozens of boxes allegedly containing classified material that Trump had taken to his home when he left the White House. A source close to the investigation told the Miami Herald the FBI was able to show probable cause because Trump and his lawyers had already turned over classified documents sought by the National Archives and Records Administration, and agents suspected that Trump was unlawfully holding other classified documents from his presidency in his private club and residence at Mar-a-Lago. Some of the materials Trump took included letters and notes from foreign leaders, such as North Korea's Kim Jong-un, the Washington Post reported. Trump and his allies, including Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman, sought to cast the search as a weaponization of the criminal justice system and a Democratic-driven effort to keep the former president from winning another term in 2024. Though the White House said it had no prior knowledge, and current FBI Director Christopher Wray was appointed by Trump himself, the AP reported. Fellow Iowa House GOP members Marionette Miller Meeks of Ottumwa and Randy Feenstra of Hull also denounced the FBI search. Feenstra called the FBI search, quote, an unprecedented escalation of the use of law enforcement against a former president, unquote. Quote, our justice system should be consistent, fair, and transparent, Feenstra tweeted. Quote, the FBI must immediately provide a full accounting of facts. The American people deserve answers, unquote. Miller Meeks tweeted, quote, it's time for Washington to focus on crimes happening at our border and cities, energy independence, and not wasting taxpayer dollars investigating political rivals, unquote. Trump ally and Iowa senior Republican Senator Chuck Grassley said conservatives have reason to be skeptical of Trump-related investigations. Quote, transparency brings accountability, and if the FBI and DOJ aren't transparent about raiding a former president's home, they risk further damaging their credibility, Grassley tweeted. Fellow Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said, quote, "The American people deserve answers now," unquote. Quote, a totally unprecedented action by the DOJ and FBI, the same agencies who labeled parents domestic terrorists and sat on the sidelines while justices were threatened and churches were vandalized, Ernst tweeted. While no former president has ever been the subject of an FBI search of their home, former White House aides say Trump repeatedly and flagrantly mishandled classified documents. Multiple federal laws govern the handling of classified records and sensitive government documents, including statutes that make it a crime to remove such material and retain it at an unauthorized location. Quote, there is no revenge happening here, Iowa Senate Minority Leader Zach Walls, a Democrat from Coralville, tweeted. Quote, there is no deep state acting here. There is a former president who appears to have broken multiple laws. There is an AG who is enforcing the law. That is what is happening. Don't let them gaslight you, unquote. Our next story was filed by Donald Promnitz. Cedar Valley marching bands prepare for upcoming season. And the story begins with a photograph of the marching band practicing on a field in front of a blue water tower, and they're all wearing casual clothes and shorts. And we see a clarinet and a baritone marching by the front of the camera. Dateline Cedar Falls. The Tigers marching band is getting set for the season. And while they're keeping it simple, co-director Gerald Ramsey says it'll be a show that's easy to enjoy for parents and students alike. Unlike other 4A schools, Ramsey said the Cedar Falls High School marching band focuses more on entertaining audiences than competing with others, which leads to a more laid-back approach to their act. Quote, a lot of the 4A bands in Iowa do marching show competitions, and we chose to just go to one, and the rest of our performances are for the home crowd on Friday nights, Ramsey said. Quote, so we kind of build that show with our home crowd in mind, rather than trying to do some ultra-competitive, cutting-edge kind of stuff. That's the approach they're taking in their 2022-23 show titled Millennia Mixtape. It's a combination of songs from artists like Billy Joel, Bon Jovi, Nirvana, and Coldplay. Quote, we're doing a rock and roll show, Ramsey said. I think it'll just be very easy for the home crowd to enjoy because everybody should recognize the music and it should be fun, unquote. Participation is also high. Ramsey said around 135 students will showcase their skills at the Unidome in August 26th, home opener against Johnston. The directors will be helped by their drum majors. The student leaders are at the marching band camp taking place this week. One of them is Jenna Borick, a senior. She started in the marching band in her sophomore year and looks forward to the season with her friends and fellow drum majors Gabrielle Townsend and Ava Torres. This is her second year in the role, which she said is a departure from merely playing an instrument, as they're also leading students and working with directors to help create the final product. Quote, we just get to help the whole band figure out all the aspects of marching band, which is really fun. It's not just set to one thing or just conducting. And I definitely learned a lot of leadership skills last year doing it, which I'm going to teach them, hopefully, and help show the band as well. With the challenges come rewards, and marching band has helped all three of them, with Townsend pointing out the life skills it develops, namely coordination and time management. Quote, a lot of people state that they wish they could play an instrument. It really helps with balancing your life, Townsend said. Quote, you have to practice your instrument while balancing school life, and you have to go to football games while balancing everything else. And that's a skill that's really helpful, unquote. Along with the football halftime shows, the band will perform at the Iowa High School Music Association's Marching Band Festival on October 8th at the Dubuque Senior High School. At Waverly Shell Rock High School, 135 musicians signed up to play for the Gohawks Marching Band. According to band director Jim Vowles, they're completely non-competitive, and that approach proves fun for the students involved. Quote, if you're going to compete, there's several things that you're judged on, Vowles said. Quote, so there's all these parameters that you are being judged upon. We kind of base ourselves just like the Panther Marching Band or any college band. It's about entertaining the audience, and so it is more laid back, unquote. Waverly Shellrock will perform two different shows during marching season. The first will focus on classic rock hits from the 1970s by bands like Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles. The second show debuts in October with two songs each from Bruno Mars and Dua Lipa. They'll show off what they've practiced August 26th when they play their home opener against Waukon. At West High School, band co-director Jason Dobbs is aiming for the mid-90s in participation. As directors prepare for the 2022-23 season, they've settled on the show theme, Return of the Samurai. With the theme comes a repertoire of Japanese-inspired songs, costumes, and set pieces. According to Dobbs, the directors landed on Return of the Samurai after listening to samples of the music from different themes available to them. That was the one that stood out most, and they got to work on building around it. Quote, we're going to try to evoke images of Fuji and samurai and Japanese culture during the show. Our costuming will be alluding kind of to samurai, Dobbs said. Quote, our props in the field, pictures we have, and that kind of thing, unquote. Last year saw bands return to play at games again after complications to the 2020 season surrounding the pandemic. Dobbs said that they have students coming back with some experience, and they're looking forward to utilizing their acquired skill. Quote, I'm excited that last year we were able to have a marching band on the field, and kids got kind of a taste of what marching band is, and I think by the end of the season they had a really good feeling about it, Dobbs said. Quote, so that's something we're looking forward to building on this year, unquote. West High's first home game is September 2nd. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, East High School director Joel Smith is expecting a smaller band without a color guard. Quote, it's hard to say right now, Smith said. There's always that unknown as to you send out all the information and you do what you can. By getting them in the door is kind of the hardest thing, unquote. However, what the band may lack in numbers, it more than makes up for in enthusiasm, especially with the freshmen. Quote, they got a taste of what the show was like last spring, and they were really, really excited, Smith said. Quote, a lot of them, when I asked them how their summer went, they said, boring. This year's theme for the Trojans is City of Lights, which will be inspired by Paris. French classical music will be played as part of the show, and the set pieces will also reflect the themes presented. It's a production that Smith is eager to present at Memorial Stadium when the Trojans play as the home team against Wahawks in their first game of the season on August 26th. Out in Gilbertville, Don Bosco is likewise getting in on classical music for their show, The Last Dance. They also have a French composer represented with Camille Saint-Saëns, along with Tchaikovsky and Andrew Lloyd Webber. According to director Myron Makeda, the band will compete and play at the Five Seasons Marching Invitational in Cedar Rapids on August 1st, as well as the State Marching Band Festival, the West Liberty Marching Invitational, and Muscatine Marching Invitational, all on August 8th. Like Cedar Falls, East and Waverly Shellrock, their home debut is set for August 26th. Next story is by Maria Cooper. Waterloo schools may delve into uniform policy. Dateline Waterloo. The new head of Waterloo Community Schools says the district needs to take a deeper look at the current uniform dress code policy. Superintendent Jared Smith shared his conclusion Monday with the Board of Education after sending out a survey to school administrators who said they would be interested in an overhaul. A total of 41 administrators responded. Smith said the district will start with what we got and stick with the same uniform rules for at least the upcoming fall semester. During those months, though, he proposed a timeline of potential actions. Smith said he hopes to send out a survey to families and staff in September and form a committee of 12 to 15 people, including teachers, parents, and administrators. In October or November, he proposes a community conversation to see what policies would look like. On November 14th, these conversations could be taken to the school board for further discussion. He hopes the decision or recommendation could be made by December 9th for the second semester. Board member Stacy Mills spoke up about the issue, saying her daughter at West High received a letter from the school which stated children not following the dress code will be sent home. She said this should change before school starts. Sue Flynn, president of the board, said with a new superintendent and school starting in 2 weeks, such a change is not in the district's best interest. Quote, "It's not in our best interest to send children home," Mills said. "I cannot see the benefit of telling a child who showed up to leave," unquote. Other board members said, although being sent home may not be the best option, children need to follow the rules. Board members decided, since the topic was not an agenda item, they would end the conversation. In other business, the board accepted a bid of $433,200 plus $120 per square yard for patching to the Transform East High School's east parking lot. The project includes asphalt overlay as well as improvements to the concrete ramp, stairs, and sidewalks. There will also be lighting upgrades and a trash enclosure. The bid was higher than expected due to labor and material shortages. Approved the $190,594 purchase of more than 400 Chromebooks for the 9 elementary schools that didn't receive the devices last year. The district will receive a reimbursement of $400 per device through the Emergency Connectivity Fund, making the district's overall cost $26,994. Approved the purchase and installation of preschool playground equipment for Poynier Elementary School for $39,994. The playground is expected to be ready for use by the summer of 2023. Now let's turn the page to the Cedar Valley section, and the top story is filed by Melody Parker. Kevin Dill establishes fund to provide resources for dementia sufferers and veterans, and it begins with a photograph of Kevin Dill as he sits on a bench dedicated to him at the Blackhawk County Veterans Affairs Office. Dateline Waterloo. Kevin Dill is shaping a legacy that he hopes will help and serve others. It's always been his mission as a Marine Corps veteran, former director of Blackhawk County Veterans Affairs, and now as an advocate for dementia-friendly Cedar Valley. He has established the Kevin Dill Family Fund with the Waterloo Community Foundation. Quote, "Everyone wants to leave behind a legacy that shows you mattered on this earth," said Dill, who was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia in 2019, a degenerative disease and progressive form of dementia. Quote, "I watched my wife, Tammy, struggle and cry and try to find resources. I didn't want that to happen to anyone else. He is now in the middle stages of the disease." Quote, "And I remember all the vets struggling to find resources and what they needed. They felt invisible," said Dill. Quote, "So many veterans suffer from traumatic brain injuries who later develop dementia. I wanted to create something that, after I'm gone, that hopefully when a veteran is diagnosed with dementia, there are resources available to help them. They need to know they matter," the Waterloo native explained. Kevin and Tammy have devoted their time and energy to fundraising for dementia-friendly Cedar Valley and veterans groups through golf outings, t-shirt sales, and auctioning Kevin's paintings, which he creates to keep his mind focused. Quote, "Those have raised about $5,000, Dill noted. In cooperation with Dillard's, the Dills have raised more than $70,000 so far this year. He credits the idea to create the fund to Wendy Bauman, City of Waterloo Communications Director. The fund at the Waterloo Community Foundation will make collecting and distributing donations more transparent. People want to know their money is going to the right places, he explained. Dill serves on the action team for Dementia-Friendly Cedar Valley, an organization he worked to establish in conjunction with the Northeast Iowa Area Agency on Aging. Its mission is to create a more informed, safe, and respectful place for people living with dementia and their caregivers. Among its priorities is raising awareness about dementia and educating businesses on ways to be dementia-friendly. Kevin wants to get people with dementia-related diseases off the couch, out of the house, and interacting with others, he said. Funds distributed from the Kevin Dill Family Fund will benefit dementia-friendly Cedar Valley or similar programs serving people living with dementia and their caregivers. Funds will also benefit Black Hawk County Veteran Affairs or similar organizations serving or honoring Black Hawk County veterans, such as Americans for Independent Living, Cedar Valley Honor Flights, Sullivan Brothers, AmVets Post, the Veterans Way Project, or other programs associated with the Sullivan Brothers, according to the Waterloo Community Foundation. And here we have a photograph of Kevin Dill, and we see him petting a horse in a barn. On October 8th, quote, a run to remember, the Kevin Dill 5K and Fun Run is planned on the TechWorks campus in downtown Waterloo. Funds raised will be donated to Dementia-Friendly Cedar Valley, Lewy Body Dementia Association, and Waterloo's Veterans Way. Quote, Jessica Rucker from Main Street Waterloo and I worked with Kevin quite a bit when he was the Veterans Affairs Director. Mayor Quinton Hart and Kevin worked together as well, and it was Kevin's idea to do a 5K to bring more awareness to these issues, said Bauman. Quote, because we had all these connections, it became a natural fit to come together and do this event, unquote. Main Street Waterloo is partnering with Rotary Club of the Cedar Valley to host the first annual event. It is dementia-friendly, with nearby hotels planning to offer quiet space for people with dementia. There will be entertainment and food trucks. A fundraising goal of $30,000 has been set. Individuals interested in participating in the run or sponsoring can find more information at mainstreetwaterloo.org/arunToRemember. T-shirts can be ordered now through August 31st. Our next story was written by Andy Malone. Cedar Falls Pools Plan Plunges Ahead. Swimming enthusiasts pack Cedar Falls School Board meeting in support of aquatics facility. Dateline Cedar Falls. A couple dozen swimming enthusiasts packed the Board of Education meeting Monday to re-emphasize the importance of bringing the planned aquatics facility to life. Several board members noted their continued support of the project following a hearing on it. The plans and specifications for the building shell, which the board approved last month, will be released to potential bidders this week. The hearing attracted many members of the group Jump In, which has raised funds to cover a portion of the total cost, now estimated at $20 million to $22 million. Tracy Malaro, co-chairman of the group, said it has received pledges of $2.5 million toward its $3.3 million goal. She commended the collaboration between the city, community, and school district because it will lead to the most efficient use of public and private funds and optimal facility design and programming decisions. Quote, the bottom line is we're pool people, and this is an important project to us, said Laura Wilson, a mother of two high school swimmers, one of about 10 people to speak. Quote, I think about how much my kids are in the water beyond what they do at the high school. Quote, when my kids aren't swimming for Cedar Falls, they're swimming for BLAST, Black Hawk Area Swim Team. They're teaching lessons to other kids. They're growing the program and bringing in future swimmers, unquote. Supporters contend the facility will have multiple benefits, from allowing more kids to learn to swim safely to being an economic boon capable of hosting larger competitions. But one point of emphasis Monday night was that the current Cedar Falls Community Schools pools at Pete and Holmes Junior Highs are inadequate beyond their useful life and not up to par with the facilities at other communities. Quote, procrastinating the construction of the new natatorium will leave the future of Cedar Falls swimming in crisis, said Graham Frey, a former high school swimmer. Quote, our pools are falling apart. It's only a matter of time before one or both of them will be unusable, unquote. The building shell is expected to be constructed by the summer of 2024. A specialty contractor will be brought in to build the interior features, including both the training in competition pools, at a later date. District officials and community stakeholders continue to seek other funding, like grants and naming rights, to cover the cost of the project that's gone from early estimates of $12 million to $14 million to upward of $20 million. Board President Jeff Hossman pointed to the tremendous amount of community support and noted his appreciation for the fundraising group's efforts, because the district has a limited number of dollars, unquote. We appreciate that you're helping to fill the gap so that we can truly have a facility that we can all be proud of, he said. The district has earmarked $8 million from its own coffers for the project. The city will contribute $5.1 million, according to its capital improvement program. Next, Waverly to add new wayfinding signs. Story by Andy Malone. Waverly, Nagle Signs of Waterloo will design, fabricate, and install 33 new wayfinding signs throughout Waverly. After little discussion Monday, the City Council unanimously approved the $55,000 package in line with a master plan funded by the Chamber of Commerce and facilitated by MSA Planning and Design Studio, reportedly with community input taken into account. The signs will help residents and visitors alike find places like the public schools, sports facilities, and Wartburg College, as well as the downtown business district, health center, parks, amphitheater, boat ramp, public parking, visitor center, civic center, electric vehicle charging stations, rail trail, fairgrounds, airport, and other amenities. They'll be placed along busier arterial roads, 4th Street, Bremer Avenue, the Cedar River Parkway, Iowa Highway 3, and 10th Avenue Southwest. The signs will range in size from 34 inches to 74 inches in height and 4 to 4.5 feet in width. They'll be mounted to two steel posts with 7 feet of clearance from the ground. The master plan goal was to develop a system of signage to help direct visitors to amenities and attractions that is consistent, cohesive, and instills a positive image of the community's branding and identity, according to a memo prepared by Bill Werger, Economic Development Director. The 33 signs are the first phase of the plan. Werger told the Courier they'll be put up as soon as possible, hopefully before the winter time. Logical wayfinding can more easily help motorists and pedestrians find destinations with little effort or stress, said the project overview. An effective system also presents opportunities to discover new places and services. In other business, the council approved an $8,000 contract with artist Dan Hatala for drawing of a mural on the Exchange Building in South Riverside Park off 6th Avenue Southeast. The mural will include a train in order to keep in line with the railroad theme of the Pavilion, Plaza, and Exchange Building, according to Garrett Riordan, Leisure Services Director. Additionally, the council reapproved a first reading of the proposed ordinance that enacts new public parking restrictions on streets just north of Waverly Shell Rock High School because of some revisions staff made to it. The ordinance would have enacted complete parking bans on certain sides of the area streets from September to May. That has now been changed to all year. Both sides of 4th Avenue Southwest were also to be restricted to parking for no more than 2 hours from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, from September through May. The September through May provision was replaced with while school is in session. The council may suspend its rules for city code changes at the next meeting in order to adopt the ordinance on its second and final reading before school starts, rather than wait to hold a third reading, as is the standard practice. And listeners, at this time, we want to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, August 10th, and you're listening on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. In Cedar Falls, Grace Mary Rapp, 91, of Cedar Falls, died on August 8th at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo. Grace, the daughter of William George and Anna Clote Croston, was born on January 20th, 1931, at Satori Hospital. She graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1949. In the fall of 1949, she met the love of her life, Robert. They were married on December 3rd, 1950, at First Baptist. Bob and Grace spent their entire 66 years of marriage living in Cedar Falls and were faithful members of the First United Methodist Church. Grace was a stay-at-home with her children until the late 1960s. Her career in retail began when she started in the ladies' clothing department at Kmart. She worked there until Yonkers opened a store at College Square Mall and retired from there in 1993. Funeral service will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, August 12, 2022, at First United Methodist Church in Cedar Falls. The visitation will be from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Thursday at Richardson Funeral Service. Burial will be at Fairview Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Now, in Rhinebeck, Janet Harberts, age 100, passed away on August 6, 2022, in Rhinebeck, Iowa. Janet was born in Applington, Iowa, on June 27, 1922, to Klaus and Janji Heckman Mulder. She met and married Charles W. Harberts on January 28, 1943. Visitation will be held on Thursday, August 11, 2022, from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. at Anglicus Abel's Funeral Home in Grundy Center. Funeral services will be held at the Colfax Center Presbyterian Church in Holland, Iowa, on Friday, August 12, 2022, at 1 o'clock p.m. Pastor Mark Kiefer will be officiating. She will be laid to rest in the Colfax Cemetery, and a luncheon for family and friends will follow. Janet loved being a farmer's wife. They farmed in Grundy Center, Dyke, and LaPorte City. She was a member of the Colfax Presbyterian Church since 1944, served on the pulpit committee, catechism teacher, Sunday school teacher, and Bible school teacher. Anglicus Abel's Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Now, in Denver, Janice Leanne Crows, 81, of Denver, passed away Monday, August 8, 2022, at Northcrest Specialty Care in Waterloo. Janice was born on November 15, 1940, in Bristow, Iowa, the daughter of Richard and Anna Weichers Rindels. She graduated from Allison Bristow High School in 1959. On June 17, 1960, she was united in marriage to Shellen Crows in Bristow. The couple lived on an acreage just outside of Denver for over 40 years. Janice worked as a cook at Bremwood in Waverly until her retirement in 2004. Janice was a longtime member of St. John Lutheran Church in Denver. She loved to crochet, quilt, and sew. She was involved in tops for many years and was a member of the local Red Hat group. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday morning, August 13, 2022, at St. John Lutheran Church in Denver. Funeral services will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, August 13, 2022, at St. John Lutheran Church in Denver, with the Reverend Larry Felt officiating. Burial will follow in Oak Hill Cemetery in Parkersburg. Memorials may be directed to Unity Point Hospice, and online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is area code 319-984-5379. Next, Cedar Falls. Samuel John, known as Sam Lindk, 21 of Cedar Falls, died Tuesday, August 2, 2022, from injuries sustained in an automobile accident near Farley, Iowa. He was born September 14th in the year 2000 in Waterloo, Iowa, the son of Chad and Yvette Mounts Link. Sam attended Holmes Junior High School and was a 2019 graduate of Cedar Falls High School. He worked locally in landscaping and later Urban Pie and Other Place restaurants, both in Cedar Falls. Sam loved the ocean and sitting by the river and watching the water. He enjoyed laying on his back and watching the stars move across the sky. Sam loved his friends and family and his plants and pets. He liked to shop and truly loved his job as kitchen manager at the OP restaurant on University Avenue. Services for Sam will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday morning, August 12, 2022, at Prairie Lakes Church in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Thursday at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family for future designation. Online condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Now let's turn to the opinion section. This next is a opinion piece by Paul Krugman of the New York Times. Did Democrats just save civilization? They really did it. The Inflation Reduction Act, which is mainly a climate change bill with a side helping of health reform, passed the Senate on Sunday. By all accounts, it will easily pass the House, so it's about to become law. This is a very big deal. The act isn't, by itself, enough to avert climate disaster, but it is a huge step in the right direction and sets the stage for more action in the years ahead. It will catalyze progress in green technology. Its economic benefits will make passing additional legislation easier. It gives the United States the credibility it needs to lead a global effort to limit greenhouse gas emissions. There are, of course, cynics eager to denigrate the achievement. Some on the left rushed to dismiss the bill as a giveaway to the fossil fuel industry, posing as environmental action. More important, Republicans, who unanimously opposed the legislation, are shouting the usual things they shout: big spending, inflation. But actual experts on energy and the environment are giddy over what has been accomplished, and serious economists aren't worried about the effect on inflation. Start with the environmental side. Many people I talk to assume that President Biden's environmental agenda has contained in his original Build Back Better proposal must have been greatly watered down in the legislation we actually got. After all, didn't Democrats have to make big concessions to win over Senator Joe Manchin? Aren't there important giveaways to fossil fuel interests, like aid for a controversial national gas pipeline? However, energy analysts believe that any adverse climate effect from these concessions will be swamped by the gains from tax credits for clean energy. The REPEAT project, compiled by Princeton's Zero Lab, has produced a side-by-side comparison of emission cuts under the Inflation Reduction Act and the earlier House version of Build Back Better. By 2035, the IRA, they estimate, will have delivered more than 90% of the emissions reductions that BBB would have achieved. After all that legislative drama, Biden's climate policy has emerged essentially intact. How was this possible? Right at the beginning, the Biden administration decided that its climate policy would be all carrots and no sticks, that it would provide incentives to do the right thing, not penalties for doing the wrong thing.
The strategy, it was hoped, would prove politically feasible in a way that, say, a carbon tax wouldn't. And this hope has been vindicated. Furthermore, it's a strategy that seems likely to pay political dividends in the future. One new study by E. Mark Curtis and Iona Marinescu finds that, quote, the growth of renewable energy leads to the creation of relatively high-paying jobs, which are more often than not located in areas that stand to lose from a decline in fossil fuel extraction jobs, unquote. So what did the Biden administration lose? Unfortunately, much of the social spending, BBB, originally included, child tax credits, universal pre-K, and more, were cut. That's tragic, although enhanced health insurance subsidies, which have helped bring America's uninsured rate to a record low, have been extended. But Democrats delivered on their climate promises more or less in full. What about the critique from the right? Aside from the pathetic attempt to portray the IRA as a big tax hike on the middle class, Republicans like Mitt Romney are trying to lump this legislation in with last year's American Rescue Plan, which they claim caused inflation to spike. Never mind whether this claim is true. The key thing to do is do the math. The Inflation Reduction Act calls for spending less than $500 billion over a decade, compared with the American Rescue Plan's $1.9 trillion in a single year, and will actually reduce the deficit. That's why independent analysts find that it will have little effect on inflation. But if the spending isn't very large, how can it have such a big impact? The answer is that right now, we're sitting on a sort of cusp. Renewable energy technology has made revolutionary progress, and renewables are already cheaper in many areas than fossil fuels. A moderate push from public policy is all that it will take to transition to a much greener economy, and the Inflation Reduction Act will provide that push. Given all this, however, why did every single Republican senator vote against the IRA? They aren't all ignorant and innumerate. I'm pretty sure that Romney, for example, knows that he's talking nonsense. Nor can we easily invoke differences in ideology. The IRA's climate push mostly relies on tax credits, and Republicans have themselves used tax credits to achieve social goals, like the much-abused Opportunity Zone credits in Donald Trump's 2017 tax cut. Almost surely, what we're really looking at is the politics of spite. Every Republican in the Senate was willing to kill our best chance at avoiding climate disaster simply to deny the Biden administration a win. The good news is that the legislation passed in spite of their spite, and the world is a more hopeful place than it was just a few weeks ago. Grassley and Ernst opposed Inflation Reduction Act, which includes Democrats' plan to cap insulin prices. This story was written by Brianne Fanastyle. Democrats in the U.S. Senate approved sweeping legislation over the weekend targeting health care, climate, and tax policy. But Republicans voted against a proposal that would have capped insulin prices for private insurers, arguing it did not meet Senate rules. Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst joined every other Republican in opposing the final legislation Sunday afternoon. And although seven Republicans voted with Democrats to preserve the legislation's $35 insulin cap, Grassley and Ernst opposed that as well. The $750 billion Inflation Reduction Act includes record spending on clean energy initiatives, measures to reduce prescription drug prices, and changes intended to ensure large corporations pay income taxes. The bill includes the plan to cap insulin at $35 a month for Medicare patients. But a proposed cap on costs for private insurers was found to be in violation of rules that govern the reconciliation process, which Democrats used to shield the legislation from a Republican filibuster. Democrats chose to bring that provision up for a vote anyway. Republicans offered an amendment that they argued addressed the pricing issue without violating Senate rules, which Grassley and Ernst voted for. But Democrats rejected it, saying it did not go far enough. 7 Republicans sided with Democrats to try to keep the original $35 cap in the bill. They were Senators Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Josh Hawley of Missouri, Cindy Hyde-Smith of Mississippi, Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Dan Sullivan of Alaska. Here's what Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst said about the inflation bill insulation plan. In an email, a spokesman for Grassley noted that the Democrats' bill did not contain things like accountability or transparency measures for pharmacy benefit managers, which could be addressed in separate legislation. He said Grassley has pursued other avenues to reduce the costs of insulin, including leading a bipartisan investigation into insulin prices with Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. Grassley said in a statement Sunday that the legislation is part of Democrats' anti-energy, anti-growth tax and spend agenda that has fueled record inflation. Quote, Democrats ignored their own economists when they spent $1.9 trillion to get us in this mess, he said. Now they're ignoring independent analysis, warning that this bill is going to cause even more pain. This partisan bill, written behind closed doors without any input from Republicans, will raise taxes, cut jobs, kill cures, and fuel inflation, all at the worst possible time, unquote. Grassley is seeking an 8th term in the U.S. Senate this fall. His opponent, Democrat Mike Franken, was critical of Grassley's no votes. Quote, throughout his 47 years in Washington, Senator Grassley has consistently said one thing and done another, all while claiming he's working for Iowans, unquote. Franken's campaign manager, Julie Stauch, said in a statement, quote, now the more than 240,000 Iowans with diabetes who depend on life-saving insulin will pay the price through higher costs, unquote. Ernst, who is not up for re-election this year, said on Twitter that the plan is reckless at a time of high inflation. Quote, we are in a recession. Inflation is at a 40-year high, she said. Do Democrats really think now is the time to raise taxes and spend billions more? Yes, they do. And their reckless hashtag tax and spend spree is proof, unquote. On a final vote, every Senate Democrat voted for the bill and every Republican opposed it. It now heads to a vote in the Democratic-controlled House, where it is expected to pass as early as this week. Now we return to local news from the Courier. Store clerk recounts gunfire following argument over a lighter price. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz of the Courier. And the story begins with a photograph of a patrol car parked out front of the Logan convenience store. Dateline Waterloo. A clerk at a Waterloo convenience store said an April shooting at the business started with an argument over the price of a lighter. Authorities allege Tony Cecil Orr Jr. began shooting at the clerk at Logan convenience store as his brother yelled at the employee. Orr, 18, of Memphis, Tennessee, is charged with intimidation with a weapon, carrying weapons, and going armed. Testimony in his trial began Tuesday in Blackhawk County District Court. At Logan Convenience Store, 735 Logan Avenue, disposable lighters were going for 2 for $1 or 75 cents each. Derek Tatum, a clerk at the shop, said a patron argued with him over the price one day in April. The customer, Alante Amachi, yelled and had some choice words, Tatum said, while on the witness stand Tuesday. Quote, I said some smart things back to him and he left, Tatum said. Then, about 3 days later, on April 20th, Amachi returned, allegedly with his brother, Orr, in tow, and resumed the squabble, quote, threatening and talking reckless, in line as Tatum waited on another customer, the clerk said. At some point, Orr, wearing a mask and standing by a shelf of potato chips near the door, pulled a handgun with an extended magazine from his waist and began shooting, Tatum told jurors, or aimed one shot and turned, firing behind him as he ran out the door, Tatum said. Two of the bullets came within a foot or two of Tatum and the customer he was ringing up. Quote, I ducked all the way to the floor, Tatum said. When he looked up, the gunman was gone, and patrons were checking themselves over for injuries. No one was hit by a bullet, prosecutors said. Tatum said he grabbed the store gun, a revolver placed behind the counter just in case, and called 911. Quote, it's unreal. I can't believe this just happened, Tatum said. In court, Tatum identified Orr as the shooter. Prosecutor Brad Walsh said police recovered three spent shell casings and one fired bullet from the scene. When police searched a home where Orr had been staying 9 days later, they found clothing and shoes similar to those seen in surveillance videos of the shooting. They also found an extended magazine and ammunition, but no gun. Next, in an update filed by Jeff Reinitz, missing Kansas woman found safe in Waterloo. A Kansas woman who was missing for almost a month has been found safe in Waterloo, according to police. Michaela Robertson had last been seen outside Abilene, Kansas, on July 17th, when she apparently told her mother she was going to meet someone and never returned. Robertson has ties to a Waterloo man, and it wasn't until last week that Waterloo police were notified about the case. On Tuesday, Waterloo police issued information about the disappearance, and by the end of the day, she was found safe in the Waterloo area, authorities said. Waterloo police notified Kansas authorities about the development. Next, station manager pleads in livestock fraud case, filed by Jeff Reinitz of the Courier. Wacoma, a livestock station manager accused of manipulating scales when weighing pigs, has pleaded to federal charges in a fraud investigation. Tyler Jeffrey Thoms pleaded to one count of causing a livestock dealer to keep inaccurate records on Tuesday in the U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. Court records indicate the offense is punishable by a maximum of 3 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Sentencing will be at a later date, and Thoms remains free. Thoms had worked for Lynch Livestock, and court records allege he used a crowbar to lift electronic scales while weighing and arbitrarily downgrading swine brought in for sale at the Wacoma buying station between 2018 and 2022. At the time, Lynch Livestock was under a 2017 consent agreement with the U.S. Department of Agriculture following an earlier investigation into weighing and sorting practices at the company. Waterloo man wins $50,000 Powerball prize. Clive, a Waterloo man has won a $50,000 Powerball prize. Michael Harper matched 4 of 5 white balls and the Powerball in the July 30 drawing. He was one number away from winning that night's $178.8 million jackpot. Harper purchased his winning ticket at Goody Mart, 306 Byron Avenue, in Waterloo, and claimed his prize Friday at the lottery's Cedar Rapids regional office. The winning numbers in the July 30th drawing were these: 4, 17, 57, 58, 68, and the Powerball 12. The power play number was 3. Players in $2 Powerball choose their first 5 numbers from a pool of 69 and another number, called the Powerball, from a separate pool of 26. The power play option is available for an extra dollar per play. Now, in an article labeled Campaign Almanac, Desir calls for 3 gubernatorial debates. And the story is filed by the Courier's Des Moines Bureau and begins with a photograph of Deidre Desir. Dateline Des Moines. Deidre Desir, the Democratic candidate for Iowa governor, on Tuesday called on Republican incumbent Governor Kim Reynolds to participate in at least 3 debates before the November 8th election. At a news conference near the Iowa Capitol, Desir said her campaign has accepted at least 3 invitations from media outlets and advocacy organizations that are hosting debates or candidate forums, and has been in discussions with more. Quote, when we talk about all political power being inherent in the people's way is through democracy and exercising their right to vote. And the people deserve myself and our current governor on a stage, Desir said at a news conference. Reynolds's campaign spokesman said the governor is happy to debate and that those details will be ironed out as fall approaches. Rick Stewart, the Libertarian Party candidate for governor, posted on social media his own debate challenge to Desir, calling on her to reject any offers from debates that do not also include him. Mathis endorsements. The campaign for Democratic congressional candidate Liz Mathis announced the endorsements of 9 black pastors in Black Hawk County. The endorsements were reached as a group, according to one of the pastors' statements, in a Mathis campaign news release. Mathis, a state legislator and nonprofit leader from Hiawatha, is running against Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. And listeners, that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, August 10th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.